Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Janeshu Jayamaneshu
Janeshu Jayamaneshu
Kamaloha Vagnina
Kamaloha Vagnina
Satyase Nina Mukto
Satyase Nina Mukto
Gangam Bhasta Iva Tripaha
Gangam Bhasta Iva Tripaha
Janeshu
Janeshu
All people
Dhyamaneshu,
even while they are burning,
even while they are burning,
kama,
kama,
of
lust,
lobha,
lobha,
and
greed,
dava
agnina,
in the forest fire,
in the forest fire,
natapyase, you are not burned,
you are not burned.
Agnina,
Agnina,
from the fire,
from the fire,
Muktaha,
Muktaha,
free,
free,
Ganga Ambaha,
Ganga Ambaha,
in the water of the Ganga,
in the water of the Ganga,
Star,
Star,
standing,
standing,
Eva,
Eva,
as if,
as if,
Dvipaha,
Dvipaha,
an elephant,
an elephant.
Although all people within the material world are burning in the great forest fire of lust and greed, you remain free and are not burned by that fire. You are just like an elephant who takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganges River. Purport, the natural result of transcendental bliss is described in this verse. The young Brahmana was physically very attractive and his senses were full of potency for material enjoyment. Yet he was not at all affected by material lust. This position is called mukti, or liberation. So the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura explains that within the Ganges flow great currents of water capable of extinguishing a blazing fire. If an elephant maddened by sex desire stands within the Ganges, the powerful cooling currents extinguish his lust and the elephant becomes pacified. Similarly, ordinary human beings trapped in the cycle of birth and death are constantly harassed by the enemies of lust and greed, which never allow the mind to be completely peaceful. But if following the example of the elephant one situates oneself within the cooling waves of transcendental bliss, then all material desire will soon be extinguished and one will become shanta, or peaceful. As described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta. Thus, everyone should take to the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and cleanse himself in the cooling waters of Krishna consciousness, our real eternal consciousness. Om Anagyana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurum Yaditam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Krishnam Sattam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamane The natural result of transcendental bliss is described in this verse. The Avadhuta Brahmana is manifesting the symptoms of spiritual advancement in that although everyone around him is absorbed in material activities, in material pursuits, he remains aloof. We were discussing this yesterday. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina. For those who are embodied, then the urging or the pushing of the senses is felt. But for one who's experienced a higher taste, rasabhajam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate, one who's experienced a higher taste as a result of transcendental or spiritual realization, engagement in devotional service, is able to resist the pushing of the mind and the senses. Srila Prabhupada gives the example, actually the Bhagavatam gives the example of eating a meal. Devotional service is like eating a meal, in that when one is fully absorbed in service and realization of one's spiritual position, then one automatically is satisfied. His taste for engagement and his nourishment, his support, his nourishment, tushti, chuddha parino nagasam is described. The desire to enjoy, basically, is satisfied. And one is nourished. Just like, you know, when you're eating a meal, assuming that it's been properly prepared and it's nicely cooked, then one automatically gets to taste nice things. Right? So the desire to enjoy different tastes is satisfied with a good meal. At the same time, when you have a good meal, then automatically you're nourished. Right? Your strength and health is maintained. And Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that eating food or preparing food is for three purposes. Right? For increasing the duration of life. That's why we eat food. If we don't eat, then we die. Right? That's the lower level of consciousness, anamaya. I eat, therefore I am. Right? That's a baby consciousness. When the baby is not fed, right? Feed it, quiet. So eating a well-cooked meal, one is nourished, one enjoys tasty taste, if you like, and one, as a result of that, becomes satisfied. So preparing food is for increasing the duration of life, for improving our health, and most importantly, it's for purifying our consciousness, actually. That's why we take prasadam. Prabhupada encourages the devotees. Actually, Prabhupada mentions, you know, by simply engaging in three things, one becomes perfect in spiritual life. By performing kirtan, by dancing, and by taking prasadam. Simple things, right? We can become fully self-realized just by those simple activities. So anyway, tushti pushti chud payanonu gasam. One's Desire to taste good things is satisfied. One's health is nourished. And one, as a result, then becomes satisfied. His hunger is cured. So similarly also, a devotee who engages in devotional service, hearing, chanting, or the nine processes of devotional service, Ravana, Kirtana, Vishnu, Smaran, one will automatically satisfy their desires for engagement, for activity, for association, for the all of the basic needs that exist in a person. So the Avadhuta Brahmana is manifesting this these symptoms of full satisfaction, because despite the fact that he's surrounded by materialistic people, he himself is not influenced to engage in materialistic activities. One of the lessons of the Ramayana, actually, keeping good association, isn't it? One of the lessons that we learn, because Dasarath's wife, Kaikeya, yes, was influenced by her servant, who was always criticizing. One of the lessons of the Ramayana, always criticizing. And as a result of that, then she had a very wicked bent of mind. And as a consequence, then Ram was banished to the forest. There's the power of association. Asat-sanga-tyage-vaisnava-cha. Prabhupada quotes this often from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Lord Chaitanya's description of a Vaishnava. Vaishnava is a person who understands what's good and what's bad, and knows how to follow the good and avoid the bad. Because this is another lesson that can be learnt from the Ramayana, from Lord Ram's example. Lord Ram is known as the Mariyada avatar. You know, Krishna is known as the Leela avatar, if you like. And he does all sorts of things that we are not recommended to do. But if we try to imitate Krishna, then it is said that that's like drinking poison. We try dancing with 16,108 girls in the forest in the dead of night. That will have a very detrimental effect on our consciousness. But for Krishna, actually, it's the display of his transcendental leela and the love and affection exchanged between him and his most intimate associates. Right. And so in that sense, it is the perfect example of devotion, but not to be imitated. Krishna's activities are not, you know, as Prabhupada says, you can imitate Krishna's dancing with 16,108 gopis, actually more than that, when you're able to also lift Govardhan Hill with your little finger. Whereas Lord Ram is a different example, because Lord Ram sets the boundaries. Mariyada means the rules and regulations, the boundaries. And this is why Lord Ramchandra is actually loved and adored, because of his setting the example. You know, the Ramayana is a literature, or the story of Lord Ram is a a story that is discussed, honoured, imparted throughout many countries in Africa, in India, in all parts of Asia, practically speaking, Vietnam, Thailand, Bali. And basically the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra extol virtue, moral behaviour, which is this, asat and sat. And the Ramayana contains 24,000 verses which illustrate this principle of knowing what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And basically the moral teachings of the Vedas are meant to bring us to the point of surrendering to Krishna. And our spiritual advancement is actually based on a foundation of following that which is correct and avoiding that which is incorrect. And without a clear understanding of these principles, then the devotional service, the fledgling devotional service of a neophyte, can actually become contaminated by what is called, sahajarism, actually, if there's not a clear understanding of what is right and what is wrong. An example of that is, an example of that is in the early days of ISKCON, there was sort of a motto, if it's not nailed down, then it belongs to Krishna. Right? So, which means, basically you can go and steal anything for Krishna, and because it's for Krishna, then it's okay. But, stealing for Krishna will not, in the long run, bring credit to the society of devotees, right? And it's probably not even, it's not even good for the person who's stealing. Because as we see, after a while then you just start stealing for yourself instead of stealing for Krishna. Stealing for Krishna is just the excuse, right? So, in Lord Ramchandra's pastimes and his activities, then we see strict adherence to moral regulations, social and moral principles that act as the basis of support for actual spiritual life. Of course, we glorify Krishna for stealing. But as I said before, we don't imitate Krishna's pastimes. We understand the elevated nature of Krishna's stealing. And that doesn't mean then that we can then become thieves, as an example. And Lord Ramchandra, his example shows how one should perform dharma, stick to the principles of religiosity, even in the most trying of circumstances. So it's a very important example. Even in the most difficult circumstances, when your father tells you to, go and live in the forest, leave home and go and live in the forest, even though it's the most unjust thing. In one sense, from one point of view. Still, his father told him to go and live in the forest, and that's what he did. He obeyed the order of his father. There's a strict adherence to this dharma. If our fathers, I don't know about your fathers, but if my father told me to do something like that, and my father told me to do many things, which are actually good for me. And I just said, forget it. And in that circumstance, actually, in one sense, Lord Ram would have been in his own right to reject the order of his father, because it was unjust, actually, based on that principle that I mentioned before of the evil influence, the bad association that his wife had been exposed to. So, of course, you know, we're not advocating, you know, senseless or mindless adherence to devotional principles, right? Because that becomes, what is it? Niyamagraha, right? There's niyamagraha and niyamagraha, which means ignoring the rules and regulations or being overly attached to following the rules and regulations. So we're not advocating, you know, foolish adherence to principles. But still, Lord Ram does illustrate this point of strict following of the Vedic principles as the basis of a solid and stable community, for example. Solid basis for an individual's progress, both materially and spiritually. Very, very important. For that reason, because he is the highest example of Vedic Dharma for humans, then Lord Ram is loved and worshipped by everybody. So, back to our purport. The Avadhuta Brahmana is described as being like an elephant. What is it? Dvipaha. Dvipaha. I thought Dvipa was an island. Dvipa means island, doesn't it? Is an elephant also known as Dvipa?
It's a big U, big I. In
big I.
In the Dvipa. This is small.
This is a small. Dvipa is elephant, is it?
Dvipa.
Dvipa is an island. Long I. And little I is an elephant. So he's a little island. Huh? Anyways, it's interesting. He says here that, you know, the enemies of regulation, if you like, Lord Rama is the epitome of regulation, right? The enemies of regulation is lust and greed and anger, and the six vices. So it's mentioned here that the Avadhuta Brahmana was free from the muktaha, right? Everybody else is influenced by the dava agni. Dava Agnina, just like we sing Samsara Dava Nala Lila Loka, right? So this is the Dava, the forest fire, Dava Agni, the forest fire. And that forest fire is described as being the burning of lust and greed. I mentioned this the other week, you know, the lotus stem in which all of the different planetary systems are contained is described as being white hot. White hot, like, you know, metal, when you heat it up and heat it up and heat it up. It goes from, you know, red and gold eventually to white hot. That means extremely hot. And that burning is the burning of the desires of all of the living entities. Basically under the influence of lust and greed. The beginning. We have strong desires to enjoy, and lo and behold, even when we get what we think will make us happy, what happens? Our desire just increases, and so we want more. Give me more, give me more, give me more. And so then when we can't get, what we want, anger comes next. From anger we lose bewilderment of memory and so forth. It's a cycle, it's a chain. So the lust and greed are considered to be the enemies of the rules and regulations of an ordered society. And so that's why, you know, in the beginning of devotional service, we are recommended to follow the basic rules and regulations. The yama and niyama, the things that we shouldn't do and the things that we should do. Then, when a person becomes expert in understanding, you know, the do's and the don'ts, illustrated by somebody like Lord Ram, then if there's a need to transcend those, they're actually able to, because they know what's good and what's bad. And they also know then the proper application of those principles. So the nature of the Avaduta Brahmana is that he's described like an elephant. The elephant standing in the Ganges, because the Ganges represents, you know, the mercy of Krishna in the performance of devotional activities, in the performance of devotional service. And as mentioned in the purport, when a very lusty elephant is put in the Ganga, then the cooling waves of the powerful river actually are so potent that they're able to subdue the lusty desires of the elephant. So similarly also, a person who might ordinarily by bad association be influenced by the pushings of karma and lobha, which means pretty much everybody, and being burned by that, the dava agnina, the forest fire of lust and greed, and then the reactions that come about as a result of that: anger, bewilderment of memory, illusion, foolishness, madness. Well, this all comes about as a result of the pushings of lust and greed. One can be freed from that by the engagement in devotional service. Therefore, we worship the spiritual master, because basically the spiritual master is described as giving the cooling rains that extinguish this fire of conditional existence. So the Avaduta Brahmana is described as being like an elephant standing free from the influence of the forest fire of material existence, standing firmly, being engaged. The Ganga more or less represents devotional service, being fully engaged in devotional service. So therefore, and Prabhupada then, not Prabhupada, Hridayananda Maharaj then quotes this verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita: Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta. A devotee is peaceful because of being fully engaged in devotional service, and then in that full engagement, following originally the basic rules and regulations, don't do this, do that, becomes shanta, peaceful. What is it? Bhukti mukti siddhi kami. What's the next? Sakale ashanta. Sakale means all. Right? Just like in Mayapur, you know, when at the end of Mangalarti, they say Sakale boshum, which means everybody sit down. And of course, they have to say it about five times for the Bengalis to hear it, because they're all keen to put the water on the tulsi. Harry Soray does it every year.
Shakale Bosun.
So, mukti means those who are basically interested in material enjoyments.
Bhakta.
Bhaktaram. Krishna is the enjoyer. But when we think we're the enjoyer, then we're known as bhukti. Persons who are interested in material enjoyment. Bhukti, mukti. Those who strive for liberation, mukti, are certainly more elevated than those who are interested in material enjoyment. But still, Prabhupada describes, because their motivation is for personal sense gratification, right? Personal liberation, therefore they're still considered to be materially motivated. Mukti, mukti, siddhi, and those who perform the yoga process to get siddhis. Right? I remember when I was a teenager, I was attracted to the idea of being a yogi. You know, so I could walk on water. Read people's minds. You know, basically people want the siddhis because of the attractiveness of those cities, and people will think, oh, he's a really elevated personality. You know, there's a story in Radhanathaswami's book where you know, he met so many so many mukti mukti city types in India when he first went to India. But there's one person he met who was a yogi, and he had a following of people that were coming to his presentations, and Raghunath Maharaj, I think, was leaving at that point, but this Baba begged him to stay for his final presentation, and in that presentation he was speaking to people. Then he put himself in a very intense, you know, pose, and then he manifested Shiva Lingam for everybody.
Whoa!
And then he started producing vibhuti, you know, dust, pouring it out. And then he said, you know, and then everybody was glorifying him, you know, like he was God or something, like he was Bhagavan. But he said to everybody, he said, no, you know, I am not Bhagavan. You know, anybody can do this. I can create some ashes, but Bhagavan is the person who creates the whole universe. Not just this universe, but all of the universes. So people, you know, people go to these cities because it attracts attention. And so really, you know, again, it's basically a material motivation to get the cities, so that people will think, oh yes, he's God. Or he's at least a very, you know, significant personality. So, because each one of the bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami just means somebody who's very lusty, right? Kami means somebody who's very lusty. They're shakale ashanta. They're all described as being not peaceful, because they're disturbed by some personal, read, material motivation. Whereas the devotee, Krishna Bhakta, Nishkam, the devotee of Krishna doesn't have any desires. Or shall we say, we mentioned yesterday, not that the devotee doesn't have any desires, the devotee obviously has desires. But those desires, when one is properly situated in the process of devotional service, those desires are actually desires to please Krishna. So therefore, you know, the personal desire has been removed, and that desire has been sublimated or purified, so that it now becomes a desire to please Krishna's devotees, or a desire to please Krishna directly. you know, the devotee actually doesn't request anything for themselves. I was just reading it this morning. Harisori tells a story of how one Shastri learned Brahmana joined in the Krishna Balaram temple, and this Brahmana wanted to show off his scholarship, so he asked Prabhupada if he could sing some prayers of glorification that he created. And before Prabhupada had said it, he started, you know, singing. And then, but then Prabhupada, there was one point where he was making a prayer and he was saying, "Krishna, come dancing before me." And Prabhupada cut him off. And he said, "No, a devotee never prays for Krishna to come and do something for him." He says, "A devotee only prays, how can I do service for you?" That's a proper mood. He said, one shouldn't, and then he made the point, you know, you shouldn't make up prayers or sing songs that are not properly authorized in the devotional mood or in the spirit of devotion. So the mood of a devotee is, he has desires, but it's considered to be desireless because those desires are actually focused on satisfying the devotees and satisfying Krishna, working for the devotees and working for Krishna. So therefore there's no selfishness in those desires. They're for the pleasure of someone else. So Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Atta Eva Shanta, they are the ones who are actually peaceful. They can remain engaged in devotional service. It's not that they don't do anything, right? We see that devotees are always actively engaged in doing something, but that something is always an activity focused on devotional service to the Lord. And then as a result of that engagement, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's described how one follows the regulated principles of devotional service, then one automatically becomes free from the influence of calm, lobe, crowd, etc. And, you know, one becomes free from those influences by utilizing one's desires in serving Krishna. We see that in the example of Ambarish Maharaj. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udura pasta vegam. We control these urges by engaging. So the urge to speak means we speak about Krishna. The mind's demands, we think about Krishna. The actions of anger, we get angry at the non-devotees. No? Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Chaitanya getting angry at Jagai and Madai, or Arjuna getting angry to fight with the Kauravas. So we can be, of course, you know, we probably need to be careful about utilizing anger. The devotees, when they would go out on Harinam, would sort of, you know, get ready to fight with the demons. We don't get that opportunity so often, so we have to restrain anger. But we can utilize anger, you know, in that regard. We can engage the tongue in tasting Krishna's prasadam, except on a day when we're fasting. Later on, we can engage the tongue. Actually, it's interesting because, you know, it's an interesting kind of a trick in one sense. On the days when we celebrate the Lord's appearance day, then we voluntarily accept the fast. So, that, you know, when we think about having something to eat, which will come up from time to time, Then we are forced then to remember, oh, Lord Ramchandra's birthday, I don't do it today. I fast. So actually, by fasting, it forces us to remember Krishna. Right? That's why we do it. And of course, then when we're feasting, then we're taking Krishna's prasadam. And that way then we satisfy the belly. Right? Lord Chaitanya would only serve as much prasadam as five people could eat for every person. Right? And in the Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, we try to follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. Of course, we should be, Prabhupada mentioned, we should be regulated in our prasadam taking and not overdo it. All of the time. Festival occasions, it's okay. And also, even for the bhakti yogis, you know, ordinarily for the yogis, it's brahmacharya. But even in Krishna consciousness, even the act of generation can be engaged in Krishna service. So what would ordinarily be considered quite materially entangling can actually be also an impetus for making advancement in devotional service. And so therefore can be engaged also in Krishna's service. So the devotees are actually able to become shanta and nishkam by the performance of devotional service. And the Avaduta Brahmana is given as an example of that, the performance of devotional service. Because we also remember Lord Ram Chandra on this day as the epitome or the example, the pinnacle of adherence to basically the rules and regulations. In fact, he said, you know, I have appeared to establish these principles, that's his purpose, the Dharma. Lord Ram appeared to establish Dharma. Because there is a tendency in men to be irreligious. Right? I don't know if you've noticed. There is a tendency in men to be, and women, to be irreligious or adharmic. To satisfy their lust and to satisfy their greed. But Lord Ram performs his pastimes in adherence to the social, moral and other religious principles as they're enunciated within the Vedas. So that we can understand what's right and what's wrong, and on that basis then build our devotional service. When we become advanced, then really truly advanced, then we can maybe transcend those moral principles. But in ordinary, that's for emergencies. In emergencies it's okay to transgress those principles, just like there's the example, is it Vishvamitra Muni who had to eat dogs to survive? Was it him? Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Ordinarily we wouldn't eat dogs. But in order to survive, it might even be necessary. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the codices, you know, he noticed that the brahmacharis, the Bengali brahmacharis, would become very melancholy because they couldn't eat any rice. So he said, in order to preach, eat rice. So, you know, when we understand the principles behind the rules and regulations, then we can engage those rules and regulations in the service of Krishna and as an impetus then, or as a foundation basically for the performance of devotional service. Then in certain circumstances we might be able to then transgress those principles for a higher principle. But ordinarily, the devotees follow the example of somebody like Ramchandra, Lord Ramchandra. Even we see in the case of the Acharyas, Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, even if a devotee is very, very elevated, Uttama Adhikari, very elevated, still he follows the basic rules and regulations of a sadhaka. And then by following those basic rules and regulations, one gradually becomes advanced. But even then, in their advancement, they don't imitate Krishna's pastimes, right? But they still follow the principles as demonstrated by Lord Ramchandra. I don't know if you've seen it in Vrindavan, but I've seen it. You know, you see sometimes men walking around dressed as gopis with bright red lipstick and those really gaudy red, you know, like the saris that the Rajasthanis the Rajasthani ladies wear. They're quite a sight, and they've got bangles on and everything. I think they call it, what do they call them? Is it Shaki Becky? Shaki Becky. One who wears the vesh. I think it's a corruption. Shaki Becky means one who wears the dress of a gopi. Thinking that, you know, if I dress like a gopi and if I think like a gopi, then I'll become a gopi. It just looks like a silly man. You know, they'll walk around with peacock feathers in their hand and stuff. But then, as Prabhupada said, you know, if we analyse the behaviour of these people, then you'll see there's degrading elements of non-devotional behaviour, non-devotional activities. Sati Becky. So, in order to remain free and not be burned by the fire of material existence, then we're recommended to fully absorb in the river of, or the ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of devotional service. And in the beginning, there may be some disturbance in the mind and the senses, so therefore we follow the regulated practice. And Prabhupada gives the example, a bit like, you know, when a young child is learning to ride a bike, then what they do is they put those wheels on the side, right? So they won't fall off. But then when one becomes proficient in riding the push bike, then they can take the wheels off. But even though you've got your trainer wheels off of the bike, that doesn't mean then you disobey the road rules. Right? Don't stop at the stop signs. Don't give way to the right. Huh? If you want to keep your license, you'll still obey the road rules.
Nuisance is motorist.
What's that?
Nuisance to motorist. Cyclists.
They're a nuisance?
Yeah, because they don't follow the lights.
They don't follow the lights.
No rules.
Yes, that's a fact. Although usually the bicyclists they're the ones who cop the bat. You know, they're the ones who suffer more than anybody else when they get hit by a truck or a car. You know, you ride your bike along, and then all of a sudden somebody opens up their door, and they're not looking. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Mataji.
Thank you, Mr. Prabhu. Very nice lecture. One comment
yeah.
about that servant of Devi. that is called mantra.
Yes.
Mantra. So Lord Rama was never dissatisfied with Kekayi because he had to do the pastime to kill Ravana. If he doesn't go to the forest, he won't be able to kill Ravana. That was his main purpose. So therefore he was pleased actually with the Kekayi.
He was pleased that he got exiled in the forest. I think he tolerated it, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he was pleased exactly. I'm not, you know, jai, now I get an opportunity to kill Ravana. Well, I think, you know, from what I understand, what it illustrates is this point of tolerance despite difficult circumstances. That's what the lesson that we can learn. Despite there being very difficult circumstances, still Lord Ram followed the religious principle. Right? And he tolerated. You know, that's one of the symptoms of a Vaishnava, is that they're very tolerant. Even when somebody else is provocative or intimidating, attacking even, then a devotee will be very tolerant. So that was the example. Of course, as you say, it was part of the lila, which led to, you know, further demonstration of those principles. But I think that was the main tone of his response to that situation. Because at that point in time, he probably wasn't thinking about Ravana at all. Right? So that's the thing. This is the Leela Shakti is very powerful. So that even though the Lord is Sarvajna, he knows everything. Right? The Lord knows everything. But there are certain Shaktis that overpower and have more prominence. So in this particular situation, the Leela Shakti makes the Lord forget or not be aware of the fact that in the future he's going to be fighting with Ram. Right? And you can see that because you know, it was a very solemn occasion for him to leave. He wasn't going off for a party. Here we go now to get Lord Ram, get Ravana. It was a very solemn occasion. And you know, the interesting thing is that you know, it killed his father. His father honoured his promise, but in the process died from separation of his son. Another point I just remembered, and I owe these points to Kripa Moni, actually, because I wasn't going to give class this morning. I wasn't prepared for it at all, but Nishrini Kavaja's wife was sick last night, so he rang me up about half an hour before class and said, I can't give class. But fortunately, I was looking at Kripa Moni's blog, and he put out all the points that he gave of a class yesterday. So I read those and was a little bit armed. But he mentioned that another feature that Ramchandra demonstrated was that principle of giving shelter to somebody who surrenders. When Vibhishan surrendered to Ram, then others of his army said, get rid of it, you know, don't accept him, he's from the other side, kill him, or you know, whatever, do be rid of him. But Lord Ram accepted him. He said, no, he's surrendered, and he's surrendering in a sincere way, and so therefore we should accept him. So especially for the Kshatriyas, that's a good example, that when somebody surrenders and shows some sincerity, especially in devotional service, you know, when people come and they show some sincerity or some desire to be engaged in devotional service, then we should give them that opportunity. Even if they show some disqualification, there may be some external disqualification, Like he was on. He was, you know, the brother of the enemy. Is that right? And you know, the one of the chiefs of his army, practically speaking. So you know, what you'd think, whoa, traitor or whatever. There's another principle to be learnt by the devotees. Kripa, is it? To be merciful to others. Be merciful. Be merciful to yourself. That's good. But also be merciful to others. You know, we're merciful to ourselves by being hard and strict. We should be strict on ourselves. This is Prabhupada's analysis of this. We should be very strict on ourselves. But we should be a little bit more lenient on others. What do you think of that idea? Aditya? Eh? Be strict on yourself, but be merciful to me. This rule applies to everybody except parents. Parents have to be strict on themselves and strict on their children. Right? In order to set a good example, we have to have good examples. But especially when we're preaching, you know, we have to be merciful to others. Even when they're disqualified, sometimes. Even if they, because, you know, what's that song by, is it Narottam Das? Mal Samal Patita Pavana? How's it going? Yeah, you won't find anybody more fallen than me, so be, you know, because you are Patita Pavana, the most merciful to the fallen, then, you know, be kind upon me, the most fallen. So that's Lord Chaitanya's, he's the purpose for his appearance is to be merciful even to the most fallen. And certainly we get that opportunity in the Kali Yuga, there's a lot of fallen people. But if they come, then we should be merciful to them. Anything else? Okay, Kuntarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Sitaram Ki Sri Ram Nodami Ki.